Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode motherfucking 3 of the Thanks for Trying podcast. I am Corin, aka The Last Skeptic. You fucking know that already. I'm excited. I got an amazing comedian on today's episode. And as I said on the previous couple episodes, I've been recording this season over the past 9 or 10 months. So this one was actually recorded a very long time ago. It might have been February, March, those kind of times. It's featuring amazing American comedian Alex Edelman, so big shout out to him for coming down and drinking with me and chatting shit. And this whole podcast is sponsored by not someone fucking big, it's sponsored by me and my brand new album, See You in the Next Life. It is me on the bars, it is me on the beats, it's me with the pain and the struggle of heartbreak. So make sure you go listen to that on wherever the fucking thing is that you stream music on. And do that right now, because this beat you're listening to right now that you're nodding your head to and going, oh, fucking hell, that shit's good, this is from the fucking album. So make sure you go listen to that elsewhere. Not right now, listen to the podcast now and then go listen to the album. Have a laugh, have a cry. That's how most of my mornings go. Enjoy the podcast. No expenses spared. Hey,
all right, okay.
And also, you can get Super Jazz Radio because you're super close, so it's fine. I know you've had a crazy few weeks, but wait, no. Firing back, I remember. You haven't drunk in 2019.
I haven't drunk in 2019.
So you've done an inadvertently or on purpose done a dry January?
Yeah, although here's the thing. I don't really... So I used to drink a lot, hey?
Okay.
And then I drank not at all. Mm. And then I drank a lot again. Now, here's what I kind of do is... I don't use words like sobriety, but I don't get drunk anymore. Not that much. You know, it's hard because drinking is such a part of our society and culture. And if you go, I don't want one, people are like, well, you're not drinking? Well, then I'm not drinking.
They get offended.
Yeah, they get offended.
Because of their own issues with drinking.
Well, I mean, it makes sense because it's how we communicate and how we socialize. Yeah. All of us drink.
Yeah.
So I'm just pausing and take a sip of whiskey.
Yeah, that's it. I got him the cheapest.
The other thing, you got me bells. Fuck, man. Get me some nice stuff.
I like how you poured half of it, just the full thing straight away, pretty much.
Well,
this is great. I mean, considering I've got...
Also, I don't feel that bad. That's £5.49. So
no, that's fine.
No expense spared. And there's some organic vegan sour snakes here.
I thought I would...
Straight chaser.
Bring out the big guns today.
But you know what? I really... Here's the bigger problem is I like the taste of alcohol.
Mm.
And so sometimes I'm doing a little joke now about how someone offered me whiskey stones. I'm like, what's this? So you freeze it and you put it in the glass. So doesn't lose the taste.
Mm.
And, you know, the ice melts. And I'm like,
right.
What do you think I'm here for?
Yeah.
You know, you think I'm here to taste all of the whiskey? And they're like, well, you're using the wrong glass. And I was like, listen, if you weren't around, I wouldn't be using any glass.
Mm.
I'd be drinking it straight out of the bottle. And if I spilled it on the floor, I'd be sucking it out of the fucking carpet. I like to drink.
People say that about me with vodka. Like, I love drinking vodka.
I hate vodka. Vodka tastes like paint thinner. What are you...
You know what? I love that about it. I like to be punished when I drink. You know what I mean? I like to feel like someone hates me.
It certainly is a punishment.
It is a big punishment. But people go, oh, you can't drink Glen's vodka. That's not it's not good. I don't give a fuck. I want to get drunk, man. I want to get smashed. I really don't give a shit how it tastes.
I haven't been drunk in probably...
This is these sour snakes is the test of giving a dog peanut butter.
We sour snakes.
snores.
I've been sitting out for a little while.
I got them yesterday to go to the cinema with.
Yeah, bullshit.
True story.
I like, what was I about to say?
Drinking people, the quality of
last
booze.
Time I was drunk was, I got really drunk on New Year's Eve.
Okay. This may shock you, but same. I got drunk like twice in January.
Really?
And both.
That's not a long time, man. It's February, what? It's February 11th or something.
Yeah,
like that.
You know, it's kind of crazy because I always drink all the time. And I thought, you know what?
Well, this is a drinking podcast. You're a drinking podcast.
I know. And I'm right back on it now. But I got drunk in Hanoi, of all places, because I was just DJing in Vietnam, of course. And it was.
Never name drop, man. De Niro, De Niro told me never to name drop. So. Well, man, so you were in Hanoi, yeah?
I was in Hanoi, and I was DJing in this club, which was in the middle of a graveyard. And the first night we had to climb through wet cement to get there, it was fucking intense. And everyone was doing the nitrous balloons are completely legal there, so they sell them over the bar like drinks, and they sell them family sized. I don't know. I mean, they call them family sized, bro. This is problematic, and they're fucking huge things. I saw six people collapse during my set just from doing these balloons. And then the fucking balloons
You're
flew
kidding.
Off. Serious. Like, someone died the week before in a swimming pool at a party.
Do you hear about that festival shit?
Yeah, yeah.
Man, look, I don't want to be this guy. I know that some of your listeners are about to shut this off, but...
It's the power of the edit.
Man, drugs are bad news. And like... Yeah. I've lost a couple of really good friends to drugs in the last, you know, 4 months. Mm. And it's really redefined how I see all drugs, even, yeah. you know, like marijuana, which is like, sorry, the sour snakes. Bad time to take a sour snake. I can't quit the sour snakes. Drugs, man. It's really horrible. Drugs are a really pernicious,
yeah.
you know, bad thing. And they're, you know, look, and I get that there. Some people are like, well, they're just a delight like everybody else. Yeah, but, you know, they have... There's a death toll to it. And people are like, well, alcohol has a death toll. But yeah, I know. And there's cumulative health effects of alcohol. But
And there's lots we don't really understand. Like,
totally.
The only drug I've ever had a problem with is Valium. Like, I had a real, real issue with Valium. And I kind of took a good 6 months off of it. And just, you know, decided not to take it anymore. And in the past, you know, Christmas onwards, going through a breakup, I got back on Valium.
Sure.
And... having now had 2 or 3 weeks off again, I've had craziest illnesses, sickness, everything, until I had to Google it and realize I'm going through withdrawal. I'm like having withdrawal mm-hmm. from the amount of fucking opiates that I had in my system, and I'm having twitches, all sorts. So the power of that, and that's a prescribed
yeah,
fucking
it's awful.
Drug.
This stuff is awful.
Yeah. So you live in LA, right?
I live in LA.
So obviously weed culture is...
Weed culture is huge. There's yeah. weed at every party. Yeah. I walk by people on the street smoking weed and, you know, I don't want to minimize it. It's not as bad as, you know, any of the, what do you call them? Class A, Schedule A
Class
drugs?
A's, yeah.
Class A's. You know, it's... And you don't need to be a supervillain to get your hands on it, obviously. You just walk into a store. It's legal now. There's a place called MedMen, which is like
amazing.
The Apple store of weed. And it is good because you know where it's all coming from. But I was offered heroin at a party a little while ago, and I was like, are you kidding? Like,
yeah.
And by the way, they used the word heroin. There was no code word for it. They're like, do you want some ice or some...
Was this in England?
Or some Honshu Hondo? Like, they were just like, This is it. No, this is in L.A.
In L.A.
Right,
see, in England, they'd go brown. You know what? Like, I feel like if I was in an opium den back in the day and there was tons of writers there, all of the big famous writers.
Sure, like Oscar Wilde.
Oscar Wilde. Everyone was smoking a bit of brown, you know, coming up with the
It'd
classics.
It'd be hard to say no.
How could
it?
You say no to that?
No. You'd have to say
yes. You'd have to say yes. And then you would write a classic.
I don't know, man. Maybe there. I don't want to switch from like drugs are bad, but maybe there are no classics anymore because no one does brown.
It's true.
No one does brown anymore. I don't know. I'm really anti. I've become super anti drugs. Become right. really really in the and you know even, the funny thing is 6 months ago is 6 months ago. It's like oh man, you know, like decriminalize everything. Like no. Now I'm no longer like this libertarian idealist that, you know, I thought I was like, the government shouldn't regulate. I'm like, the government should babysit us for this thing because no one seems to know how bad it is. Like,
a lot of them, though, is to do with the...
fentanyl?
Well, man, yeah, of course. The non-regulated nature of a mm-hmm. lot of the shit. So people, you know, the coke that you get in this country, which is like 10% cocaine, and it's mostly fucking awful shit, like bleach or... powdered bleach or
I tried cocaine one time about a year out of college because everybody else was sort of pressuring me into it, and I hated it. This is not a fun
this is great.
I'm like, hey, can we not do this? Let's do another one, because he would be like, how was the podcast? Well, he fucking railed against drugs before we even knew who he was.
Yeah, that's it.
Would you like to introduce me to your audience?
And, I don't. You know what, I decided, since this is the first episode I've recorded of season 3, I hadn't even, when you emailed me, I hadn't even had a plan to start season 3 yet.
Oh,
so
man.
I thought, no, this is great. So,
because we try to make it work when you're doing season 2.
And this is wonderful. This is only the second ever episode I've done with one person after Taika. And so
Taika Waititi?
Yeah.
You had Taika fucking Waititi here?
Yeah.
Dude, he's the greatest Jew from the Southern Hemisphere who's ever lived.
All of this, like, I don't even need to introduce you. It's fine. It's finished. Introduce you're already in.
Me.
No, it's fine. We don't even need to introduce you.
Introduce me. You haven't written a fucking introduction, have you? You have no idea,
you know,
who I am.
I don't even.
You've got no idea who I am.
I didn't. Like, I've written talking points.
Oh my god!
Look at this.
No introduction. All right.
I don't think you're allowed an introduction,
fine.
Alex.
Fine. You do whatever. Go ahead. Let's be honest.
This is the Thanks for Trying podcast. It may or may not be episode 1 of season 3. But welcome, Alex Edelman.
All right. Perfect. Yeah.
Thanks for Trying podcast. I've got loads of these notes. I mean, who
you're
knows?
Prepared. I think you're prepared.
I believe one of the notes is great because I just wrote it in capitals. Boston, sports I don't understand.
Well, I'm huge into sports.
Sports I don't understand. As we spoke about probably before, I lived in Boston briefly in Brookline.
That's where I'm from.
Did we speak about
Brookline?
This?
No.
Oh my God. I feel like that would have been the first thing I said.
Yeah, maybe. Where in Brookline?
Near a CVS that's in between the CVS and the station.
Oh my God.
Yeah. This was 2005.
Sure. I was living there. I was 16. So what else?
Oh my God.
What else do you remember about the area?
I was going out with a girl at the time who did sleep research.
Oh, sorry.
I had a girlfriend once. She did sleep research at a hospital nearby there. So I remember walking along. I mean, I guess I must have walked fucking far. There was an amazing place to get soup. Probably the best soup I've ever had in my life. And there was an incredible Jewish deli there that had really good pickles.
Rubens.
Probably.
I mean, I know all of these places. Like, yeah. This is my hometown. These are my streets.
Yeah, these are my streets.
These are my streets. The suburban streets. We were in the same gangs. I can't believe it. Yeah, it was a huge.
Yeah.
I played ice hockey around your house. I rollerbladed by your house every day on my way to the library
for a
while. Yeah, I know this. I know this area real well.
Fuck.
I know everything about it.
And I even went to Roxbury. Ed OG, the rapper, drove me around Roxbury, and he showed me where Bobby Brown grew up and all that lot.
Yeah, oh my god!
And it was sick. I met Slane.
Slane, the rapper, the white rapper from Boston.
That's it. And they took me to the club Middle East.
Oh my god! In Cambridge,
yeah,
on top of a Cantab Lounge, one of the first places I ever performed.
There you go. And I watched their show. Him do a show there, it was sick.
Do you know what I think about a lot with Bobby Brown? There's one Jay-Z lyric that I think about more than any other Jay-Z lyric. It's not from any of his songs, from a freestyle he did on the radio. And the line is, man, it's tough being Bobby Brown. To be Bobby then, you have to be Bobby now. And the question is to have had and lost better than not having it all. I think about it all the time. Like, it's tough being Bobby Brown. To be Bobby then, you gotta be Bobby now.
You've got to be Bobby now.
I mean,
you can't experience
that's a great
one
line.
Without, you can't experience one without.
But
the
isn't
other.
That a great line about how long life is? You know, like, and how difficult life can be, and how you're never really done hustling. I guess, like, I think about that constantly.
Yeah.
It's tough being Bobby Brown. To be Bobby then, you have to be Bobby now.
Yeah.
And it's like a real.
It also begs the question: would you rather have success really early on in your life, and then have it fizzle out? You know, in your 30s. And be, I used to be someone, or kind of have a slow creep into being super successful.
There are different kinds of success, right? So, like, you know, pick a field, just any field. Music is the easiest one, right? So, like, some things are not built for longevity. Like, people tend to have their best years in their teens, 20s, and 30s, and after that, it gets exponentially harder. Like, so think about the Backstreet Boys all the time in terms of there's like, you know, they do these cruises. There are Backstreet Boys cruises.
What?
So, yeah. Oh, you didn't know this?
No.
Backstreet Boys do these cruises. I heard about it yesterday because a friend of mine was
talking. I like how you heard about it yesterday and you just went, well, you don't know about this.
Like, oh, no.
How did you not know
about this? Well, I assumed everybody else knew about this great shit.
No, but I want to go on one of these.
Do you really? Do you want to watch a 45-year-old man on stage say to his friend, am I sexual? And all the friends go, yeah. And then he's like, am I original? And they're like, yeah. Like, what a horrible life where, like, they actually have to be doing a teenage thing until they're... Like, some things are designed to be age-specific. Like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that is just for, you know, people of a certain age.
Yeah.
Like being in a boy band or being a musician is really... Music is for young people, you know? Like music really starts for young... There aren't many people who get to their 60s and 70s and find an audience or are found by a 60 and 7-year-old audience. It's mostly like kids and young, energetic people who are willing to go out and buy things.
Yeah, there's exceptions to the rule. Future Islands, Sharon Jones, people like that who kind of got there later on in life.
Uh-huh.
But I'm just so bewildered by this idea of a Backstreet Boys cruise. Is it? Do you have to stay on it?
I think you have to stay on it. And I think if you're a Backstreet Boy, you have to be on this boat for...
Okay, so Backstreet Boys perform every night. Is there a cruise that you would go on for a 90s pop band? Is there someone that you'd prefer to go on a cruise?
Ben Folds 5.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm a huge Ben Folds 5 fan.
I feel like I'd prefer to go on a collaborative journey with Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera. Maybe like, you know...
Now? I met Christina Aguilera on New Year's Eve.
Oh my God. Where? And explain.
She was... My friends were playing... I was doing a show in New Year's Eve in Times Square, a place called Caroline's. Bastille, who are mates of mine from here, I saw on Instagram that I was doing it, and they were like, hey, we're playing New Year's Eve in Times Square also. But they were playing one of the TV specials, so they're playing for, you know, like 65 million people more than I am, probably.
Right.
But they said, yeah, why don't you come down and, like, we'll all hang out. So we all hang out. Christina Aguilera's on the same special.
Oh, my God.
And they finish their thing, and it's pouring rain, and we're all, like, huddled in a tent, and I sort of remove myself for a few minutes and sort of walk around because they've given us this production passes. So half of Times Square is people crammed up against each other wearing nappies because they can't get out to the bathroom or they'll lose their place. Like, it's mental. People who stand outside. No. I know for this big global event, but the other half of Times Square is empty because they're production pass, you know, with like for trucks and crew. So I'm wearing a production pass. So I'm walking around while my friends are getting ready and Christina Aguilera is there with her entourage. And so like stood next to Christina Aguilera for a little bit in a production lane. And then I was like, hi, Christina. Happy New Year. And she's like, hi, sweetie. Happy New Year. Like, she was very nice. I got a photo of her from, you know, like, as close to, like, I sort of snuck a photo.
Yeah. Oh, okay. One of those ones. There was no permission.
Well, I didn't, like, it was before, I was just stood there before. And for a minute, when I was standing there, I was like, this is a novelty. Yeah. And then after 30 seconds, I was like, oh, no, there's a person. I can talk. There is a person. And she was, Gesundheit. She was very much a person. She was really cool.
She called you sweetie, man. I wouldn't be able to deal with that.
I want to be like, yeah, I'm your sweetie.
Yeah, that's it.
So tell me the truth. Carson Daly or Fred Durst? You may not get that reference.
Carson Daly, I feel like I only knew existed from rap songs.
Yeah, what's the rap song you know him best from?
Probably Eminem.
What's the lyric?
Oh, it's got to be from Real Slim Shady.
It's Real Slim Shady. The joke. It's a joke on the album.
Carson Daly or Fred Durst.
And ask line? Which one she gave head to first.
Yeah.
My God.
So deep.
It's not deep.
But when I go back and listen to Eminem, man, I feel it's problematic.
Eminem is wildly problematic.
Problematic. I can't deal with it.
I think Eminem is one of the few people who was making music that was more problematic than he actually is as a way to seem like ultra, you know. He wanted to be like very,
love that word.
Yeah, he wants to be really like edgy and mean, but like I actually don't believe that he was that you know, that edgy. He was just trying to sort of be it. I would say that I was a fan in elementary school.
I think after Marshall Mathers LP, before I ever considered his problematic nature, I was just so into the fucking production, which was perfect. Dre's beats, like, influenced everything.
Also, give him a lot of credit for putting Kathy Griffin in a video when not a lot of people were giving Kathy. No, he put her in a video. He thought she was funny, man.
Yeah.
Eminem is good taste in comedy, I'm guessing.
You did fucking Conan, right?
I did do Conan. And hopefully by the time this comes out, I'll have done it again.
What's the pressure like going on and doing
comedy? Nah, I mean, I say not, but you know, the funny thing is that the pressure of doing a thing like that is really difficult. And so, you know, like I've started to see this girl and she's like, I mean, this isn't coming out for a minute. So like I've started to see this girl, who knows where it's going, but she's like one of the most, she's really, really, really special, cool person. And, really like erudite, really knows a lot. And so every like offhand comment is like, has the potential for like a really good conversation. She's super. And she said to me, I was talking about being nervous about a show I was doing in LA last week or 2 weeks ago. And she said, oh, I should bring you a beta blocker. And I said, what's a beta blocker? Have you heard of a beta blocker?
I've heard of them, but I've never had them.
So a beta blocker, I guess, you take it and it stops your stage fright. And it was so interesting because, you know, this person's smarter than me. So there's not much that I could like, you know, I can't really explain anything to them. But like, I did tell her that, you know, every time I've ever been nervous before I went on stage, it was one of the greatest moments of my stage life, you know?
Yeah.
So it's weird, you know, you ask like how much pressure was there on Conan, like a lot, because you know you've picked these jokes and you know honestly late night sets don't usually go great because they're hard and because the energy is so different from the, you know, greenhouse of comedy club that you've grown your jokes in. So now you're parading it out on TV and they haven't warmed up the audience really, and they've just watched, you know, an interview with like some starlet, and that starlet hasn't quite brought the jokes and you're stressing about it. And and my friend Gary Goldman does this great thing where he right before he goes on stage, when he's doing late night, he looks at the guy he's about to pull the curtain back and he says to him, as they announce his name, he goes, can you get me out of this? Which is so funny. And he told me that. So I was about to go on stage and right before they said my name, went, hey, can you get me out of this? And the guy didn't laugh. He just went, wait, what? And I was like, no, it's my friend. It's a friend. Oh, and then they're like, Alex Edelman. I was like, I'll see you later. Goodbye. Like, it was so, but yeah, so every single, great moment that you have as a comic comes after those butterflies in your stomach, because
it makes you push harder.
I don't know if it makes you push harder, but you're more, I hate a lot of the words I'm about to use, but you're more present. Right. You're really, really there. You're super alive and you really feel what's happening to you. You really feel the weight of the moment, and you're only nervous because something great could happen. And you're like, am I standing on the precipice of something? And honestly, the answer is usually no. Cause you know, comedy, success in comedy is largely incremental. So, you know, you slowly work in a very dedicated way for a long time. And then stuff happens. Yeah. But like, the first time I met this girl, I did a show, that she saw me at. Right before I went on stage, I thought to myself, I'm as nervous as I've ever been. But I also thought, and I never have this thought, I thought, I'm so prepared though. You know, I'm so prepared for this moment.
Yeah.
And just being here is a lot of fun. And there are a lot of comedians on the show that I admired. And and it's such a cliche. This is another cliche, but like I said, if I just go out there and have a really good time, then the audience will feel it. And if they don't feel it, then they're wrong.
Also, there's no other option at that point. You can either go, you can turn around and walk away and just not do Conan or not do this show.
Totally.
Or you can just fucking get your shit together and go, I'm going to win. I'm going to do this for myself.
Totally.
And if I have fear, then I'm just going to do it scared.
I'm going to do this for myself is a really strong motivator. I'm going to do this for myself. I'm going to do this for, you know, all the people who are part of my life.
Yeah. And you just become Eminem in 8 Mile.
Eminem in 8 Mile, baby. Although he showed some real disrespect to his mom's cooking.
True. Like you going on stage, there's certain times where I get scared.
Not all of the time.
Like I've just been, I can say this because it will already be announced, but I've been confirmed to play, do the podcast live at Glastonbury. Right?
Wow.
So I'm really fucking excited about that. But I can tell you that doing it live in that big fucking tent, with two guests. I don't even know who are going to be my guests right now.
It's so fun playing Glastonbury, isn't it?
I've never done it. I've never been. I've never performed. I said since I was 14 years old, I'm not going to this festival until I'm booked. And this year finally happened. So I'm so fucking happy about that. But I know I'm going to be shitting it before I go out.
You're
there,
not going to be shit.
Because it's not... Whenever I get nervous to perform or do anything, that those nerves...
Oh, I thought you said, I know I'm going to be shitting it. No,
I'm going to be fucking sick, but I will be shitting it. yeah, but not actually sick. Anyway,
it's hard, man. It's hard, but like, this is a stressful job, dude. Yeah, it is. Know?
But it goes away the moment I get on stage. Every single time. No matter how fucking scared, you know.
You get your first laugh, you settle in.
Oh my God.
That's
especially
how
as I'm not a comic. So when I do the podcast live and I have Ramesh Ranganathan or Doc Brown or whoever it is as my guest... actual comics, and I go on, and I'm the
they're
only one.
They're both
on
shit. No, I'm just kidding. They're amazing. You know, Doc's the reason I'm a comedian here. Doc is so brilliant, man. Doc is one of the first of all, he's one of the smartest, most empathetic people I know. Mm-hmm. I did my last semester of NYU here because his sister Zadie was my teacher at, and it was my professor at NYU, and she, and this was a study abroad in Australia, and it fell through, and she went, "Hey, you should go to London if you're really interested in comedy." And she made it as an offhand remark, but I did. And then I hit her up and Zadie went, "I'll put you in touch with my brother, Ben. He's a comedian." And I got in touch with Ben, and Ben took me to a night at Tattersall Castle, and I was hooked. And I started doing shows here and started just open mics because I was here as a student, so I couldn't, you know, perform or work. But he does not get enough respect for being a great musician. He doesn't get enough respect for being a tremendous actor. And he really doesn't get enough respect for being a great comic. But he's all three of them. Big fan.
It's mad. And also, he is the one of the very few people that I've had, obviously, had the joy to perform and be his DJ when he's rapping.
Oh, yeah.
But also, what going with him to watch his stand-up, he's the only person across all disciplines of
performance. Yeah, he can do music and stand-up, he's great.
But that doesn't get nervous before going on stage.
Well, he kills it. I don't get nervous before going on stage nights, but you know.
No, you were kind of the same in the same way that you did this thing where you were just chatting away and then go, "Oh yeah, oh shit, I better go on stage now." And he does the same shit where it's like, we'll be talking about 90s rap in detail, and then they call him to stage and goes, "Oh shit, sorry, I'll be right back."
Do you know why I was not nervous going on there? Because I figured out on the train up what I was going to do, which new joke. So here's the thing, you know what helps you with nerves? People do ask me about nerves a lot, and I never give this advice, and I always should. Not that anyone ever asked me for advice. But if you're worried about nerves, you know the cure for nerves always is preparedness. People go, "Oh, I'm really nervous." And I go, "Well, then prepare more." Yeah. The more you're prepared, don't just prepare. Fantasize about your moment up there. Mm-hmm. Fantasize about the moment where you're so prepared and you surprise both yourself and everybody else with a little bit of improv or a little bit of riffing or a little bit of ease with the subject that lets you really enjoy the moment. I don't think people are as prepared as they should be for most things. Right. And so I've always been over-prepared. I over-prepare for the Edinburgh Festival. Mm-hmm. I over-prepare for everything, just a tiny bit. I know when to stop, too, so I can keep it fresh for myself, but just prepare a little more than is necessary. So, like, that show that you saw me at, was Comedy Central Festival in Southampton, right? So... that was there were comics on who were struggling right beforehand, but I knew what was going to get the crowd going. Yeah. I knew
you had enough material to like draw from in case something wasn't working. I'm guessing.
Well, yeah, totally. But what I meant was, I went on there and I could tell what the audience wanted because of what they were responding to from the other guests, and they wanted energy and they wanted a big. And that tent was half full because they were only opening the front section instead of opening the full section, and I was like, I'm going to absolutely play this tent like it's bigger than it is.
Yeah.
And this energy will fill this tent and people will either have to come to my level or it'll seem ridiculous. It'll seem ridiculous for this audience to not be energetic when I'm energetic. And if you try to suffuse an audience with your energy, they start to they can't help themselves. They loosen up. And a good compere, by the way, can pull that out of them. Doc really pulls it out of them. But they, you know, they were tough for some comics who are a little more, not every comic is sort of a high energy faker like me, but I love.
You filled that stage.
It was so fun. Yeah. It's such a fun, I love playing a big stage because in my mind, I'm actually quite, I'm an extroverted introvert, but right. I mean, like, sometimes when I'm on a big stage and things are going well, I feel bigger than myself. You know, yeah, I feel like I should always be on a stage as big. Yeah. So, like, I do better on big stages, honestly. Yeah, small stages, same. I feel hemmed in a little, but a big stage, I'm like, I could do anything right now. I could drop to my, like,
yeah.
I do a thing. I have a joke that I love doing where I spit. Like, yeah. just genuinely spit. I talk about a in different fast food employee, and I go, hi, welcome to Taco Bell. And then I just go, puh. And the audience, the reaction of seeing a comedian just actually spit on stage into the lights. I always spit into the lights so the audience can see the actual spit. People gasp, and they groan. They're like, that's disgusting. And it's so much fun. I only want to do jokes like that where people, but you can only really get away with that on a big stage. Because on a small stage, the spit is just there.
They're just covered.
It's just with you.
Yeah. What's the best way to kill someone for a heckle?
What I do is I either pointedly.
It's the swiftest way.
What I do, this is going to seem crazy and unorthodox. I ignore it and I keep moving on. Mm. But I'll pause to let the heckle sit. And then I'll ignore it and I'll just keep moving on.
Okay.
As if it's like, if you go up against a heckler, hecklers are cowards. They're real pussies. I've never once seen a brave heckler. It doesn't really work that way. They're just, hecklers are stupid. You know how
it's the same as trolls, really. I mean, they're slightly braver than trolls.
I mean, I don't know. Like, also, I think hecklers are stupid. I think, you know, whenever anyone's like, what's the best heckle you've ever received? I'm like, I've never had a good heckle.
Yeah.
Like, it's impossible. It's like, what's the best thumb on a cat? Like, they don't have them. Yeah. Like, may they have something that seems like one, but hecklers are dumb. If you ever heckled at a comedy club, you're a fucking idiot. Yeah. Like,
it's the same people.
It's like heckling at Hamlet. Like, it doesn't work that way.
It's the same people that make requests when I'm DJing. Don't fucking make requests.
Oh, come on. That's different.
I hate that. That is the same as a heckle.
Is it the same as a heckle?
Yeah, they're not happy with the service that's being provided, or they think that the rest of the room would be happier.
You've never taken a request.
If the request's good,
and well, that's different.
Or they're paying me enough money to take requests.
Sure. What's the amount? More than £100?
Yeah. Or if the gig itself is paying, if the gig itself is like one of them brand parties or a Christmas party, and it's paying really well, and you think, fuck it, I'll play whatever the fuck you want me to play. I don't care. I have no morals when it comes to that. Yeah. When you're just in a club and everyone's fucking happy and I'm killing it as always. And then one person comes up.
I'm killing it as always.
As always. But then that's just me being angry. And in the second half of the podcast, we can get into my anger. All right. So you do the fucking roast battle, right?
Oh, yeah, man.
So I ask battle rappers the same thing because obviously, like, I've had from Don't Flop on the podcast before. And
sure.
Lots of worked with a lot of amazing battle rappers. But how much do you prepare for that?
I over prepare for that.
Okay.
I over prepare for everything, you know? Like, it's
there's no freestyle element when it comes to this.
Not really. There was some riffing that I did in one of the podcasts. This guy, I was told by a friend what somebody else was going to do for one of the podcasts and for one of the roast battles. And I thought that was in poor taste. So I didn't really prepare for that. I just let them have their thing. But it's a lot of fun to do it. If you have no ego, roast battle is great.
So you never get offended or upset?
Never once been offended or upset. No, I've never heard a single, what are you going to say about me? What's anyone going to say about me that, you know, I'm just a lot of the jokes are about me being Jewish. I don't care. I talk about being Jewish all the time. There's never been an interview where it's not come up. Yeah.
Because I feel like I would get really, I don't know, maybe this is a rap thing. You know what I mean? Like, I get really upset when people, if someone's, I'll get angry and aggressive straight away. That's my default zone to be in. What's your favorite line of yours that you've done?
Oh, I had a line for, roasting somebody who, was overweight, and they said no jokes about her weight. And I was like, man, that's come one of the only things I know. And so what I really wanted to say, and the network was like, you may not say this, was actually, here's the thing. She so when I did a, so they were like, no jokes, by the way. I went, fine. So listen to every podcast she had ever done
yeah
to get more, you know, information about, you know.
This is your preparedness again.
You got to prepare, man.
Some like FBI level shit.
And so I found out that, you know, I didn't realize that she had dated someone who was previously married, someone who I knew, another comic. So I made a joke about her breaking up their marriage. And so I said, her nickname is Pudding, but it should be Hurricane Katrina because she's a homewrecker of the worst kind. And I got off stage and we left. She won the battle.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I found out later on that that joke was not okay with certain folks, and that it was, and they said to me, what do you want to stay in the show? I said, I want that joke in the show, because I didn't want it was a joke that's not about her physical appearance, and I didn't want jokes about her physical appearance on the show, if I could help it. And they went, well, Dave demanded that that joke be cut, because apparently there was some real life stuff going on where, like, she hadn't broken up, you know, she hadn't done anything, and that relationship was totally above board, but there, you know, there were rumors or something like that, that she had. So that was something that, you know, because, you know, she had unfairly been, you know, portrayed as a homewrecker, that joke accidentally struck close to the bone. But the thing is, that's very British, because in America, that is how you would get over that. Like, someone would make a joke about it, you would laugh about it, and then they'd be like, it can't possibly be true, it was a joke on Roast Battle. You know, like all of our jokes are ways of talking about things that aren't really true.
Yeah.
But here, people are like, my issue with rap battles and roast battling in the UK is that there's one element that they don't really do, which is that they distill somebody into a thing of like, this guy's the gay, this guy's the Jew, this guy's the smug, this guy's the sweet, this guy's the coward, this woman's the fat, this woman, you know what I mean? So in the States, we tend to see people as shitty and multifaceted in their shittiness. Right. But people sort of here are like, this guy's the blank. This guy's the blank. This woman's the blank. This woman's the blank. This person is a bit androgynous. This person's someone's son. You know, like it's... Right. So I think there are a bunch of differences between UK and US roast battling and rap battling. But I enjoy it across the board because, like, it's also like, what is anyone going to say about you that, A, you don't already know, or B, that is going to really hurt you?
But you must get offended in real life or upset in real life by some things.
Rarely. I mean, yes.
Because otherwise you are the perfect candidate to do roast battle.
False piety, I guess, makes me annoyed. Or the sort of Yas Queen catchphrase culture.
Oh, my God.
It's really irritating. I'm offended by that because I think it characterizes, you know, like, you know, what's her name? Ruth Bader Ginsburg is this big, she's a Supreme Court justice in the United States, but she is more of like an Urban Outfitters sweatshirt now. People like put a photo of her being like RBG swag or like, yeah, Supreme Court queen. And you're like,
my God, no.
This isn't funny. And so like feminine empowerment being used on sweatshirts to sell, you know, merchandise is disgusting. And like people sort of building their, I don't know. I don't like it one bit, but like a real sexism, a real racism.
Yeah.
That stuff offends me. People say we're, Gary Goldman, to quote him again, like people say we're too sensitive now. Like, we're just getting to a point where I'm comfortable. Like, I'm pretty comfortable actually right now with how sensitive we are. I thought we were too mean for a really long time.
Really fucking mean.
I was getting, like, it was an acidic environment, the Eminem environment. I enjoyed aspects of it.
Yeah.
But I really hated it as a whole. I thought it was shitty. Yeah. I thought it was racist. I thought it was sexist. I thought it was
anti-gay. I didn't want to hear about Bizarre's mates gang raping his cousin.
I don't know about that.
And that's on Marshall Mathers LP.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right.
On Remember Me or whatever
it is. Oh, yeah.
So how much of you... you started stand-up at 15, right?
So I heard a lot of offensive shit.
Not just that, but you grew up, you know, on stage, essentially. Is there stuff that you said back then that you, now that you've changed your, I don't know, times have changed? Is there anything
absolutely
that you kind of regret?
I changed a joke a year ago. I had a joke about someone who was overweight because the joke was good. But sometimes I do a joke and I think, well, the subject of the joke and the butt of the joke are two different things, and people find it hard to, but most people have really high IQs, honestly. Mm. Most people don't get offended by, I've offended maybe three or four people in my entire career. People have come up to me and tell me a thing's not okay.
Yeah.
And I never tell them, oh, you're wrong. I just go, thank you for checking me.
Yeah.
Like, some, I had a joke about, I have an uncle, one of my uncles who doesn't live in the States is not progressive. So I have a joke about coming out of the closet on Thanksgiving. Mm. And I go, I'm not gay. I just thought it would be hilarious because I have an uncle who doesn't like gay people. And I've actually come out of the closet on Thanksgiving, every Thanksgiving for the last 6 years. And I love doing the joke because the joke is about people who, you know, who are intolerant, and I like the joke, and it sort of normalizes this. I like the joke. I like doing the joke, and I've done it, you know, without thought of where I'm doing it for years. Like, I would do it in front of any audience. And no one has ever protested, apart from, you know, one person in Australia came up to me and said, I don't like that joke. And I said, why don't you like the joke? And they went, because it's offensive to gay people. I said, are you gay? And they said, no. And I said, okay. And they said, if I was gay, would you stop doing the joke? And I was like, no. And they're like, why not? And I said, because I don't find it distasteful. Right. So I'm not going to stop doing it. And I actually don't feel the need to be.
That is the most passive-aggressive post-show heckle ever. It's about, a really slow heckle.
I do think that... I had stuff when I started that was really shitty and bad. And I do think that I've learned, you know, that we are steeped in this culture that is sexist, racist, oppressive. You have to be really careful with your jokes. Yeah. But I wasn't careful when I started because I was steeped in this really offensive comedy club culture. I came up in Boston and New York comedy clubs. And those places are not woke places. Those places create bad comedians for the most part. Those places create bad environments for women for the most part. So, like, there are major exceptions. The Comedy Cellar in New York, I think, is actually a wonderful place for free thinking, good comics, which is where I saw a lot of my comedy.
There's also, like, I find that the only times that I've recently been not offended as such, but disappointed by stand-up comedians is when what they're doing is reductive of something that they clearly don't know a lot about.
Sure.
About Muslims or about whatever it is. And it kind of just, it disappoints me more than offends me. I've seen so many, obviously being around Tiernan and Doc and like through many, many years, I've seen some of the best stand-ups in the world. And I'm very aware of incredible stand-ups that don't need to make such disappointing statements as that.
Yeah, it's hard. By the way, you know, two of my favorite comics growing up were Bill Cosby and Louis C.K.
Right.
And they are, although, you know, I tweeted when one of the Louis C.K. things happened, I went, you know, this is really disappointing that he's done the thing, not that he's being called out for it.
Yeah.
You know, for every young comedian who grew up in Boston admiring Louis, because he's a Boston comic. And I said, I know this is the most boring take in the world. Will no one think of the comedians, but it's a bummer. And another comic that I admire tweeted, what the fuck are you on about, mate? And I was like, oh no, I've been outwoked. I thought I was the wokest. I thought I was as far to the woke as he could be, but this guy's gotten between me and the woke. I've been outflanked on the woke side. I've got even more empathy than everybody else for everyone afflicted by his material. You know, like nothing takes the edge off a comedian you admired being disgraced, like a comedian you currently admire telling you you're an idiot for tweeting about it. There's a strong case to be made for never tweeting.
I have stopped tweeting as much.
Oh, man. Me too. After that, it ruined my day.
Yeah.
I was like, no more tweeting.
That's it. Finished. So, all right. Before we go to the little piss break and then we come back and I do my segments, which I'm really excited for, I just want to see if there's anything else I need to talk to you about.
Go ahead.
You did fucking... best motherfucking newcomer at Edinburgh.
Yeah, it was great. It's 2014. It started my career. I love that festival and I love what it's done for me. It's made me full-time as a comic and I've not looked back. You know, I'm financially stable because of comedy, because of the Edinburgh Fringe. And
are you doing it again this year?
No, I can't. I've got to write on this television show.
Yeah.
But, and also I like to take a year off. I like to take a year off and sort of incubate the next show. I think really hard about what my shows are going to be about. And yeah. I assemble really slowly. But I love the festival and I love the comedians that play it. And I love the young energy that it brings. The Edinburgh Festival is the world's largest arts festival. It's not even close. And so I feel inspired being there. And my peers who play there, like,
it's amazing. It just, I also love being there. I do feel for the comics that get either priced out by it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But the Free Fringe is a great resource now for those folks. But even so, it's expensive. There's no non-expensive way.
People are paying it off like 5-10 years later.
I spoke to an Avalon act who is, you know, one of the most successful Edinburgh comics. And they said it's really hard to, estimate how big an impact Edinburgh's had on my career. Mm. But, you know, both of us also know folks who just weren't ready for it or who don't. That's the other thing, man. Like, prepare. People don't prepare for these festivals. You go up, you have a bad festival. Some people aren't emotionally equipped for it. Also, sometimes you just don't hit. I was part of a play there in 2012. That was my first experience of the festival. The play didn't hit. Yeah. It just didn't work. People didn't like it. No one came. Yeah. It is how it is. You just got to get on with it. Like,
and you need to have failures in a career. You have to.
Well, that one should be worth two or three. But you know, everyone fails. And even that, by the way, some of my best memories, some of the first things I learned about preparation, because that play was underprepared.
Right.
So you learn valuable lessons from failures. I hate that shit, but that's true. And like,
it's also part of growing, being able to take positive criticism.
Totally. Because I was not ready.
When it's your creative personal thing, you don't want anyone to tell you how to do it.
Absolutely.
Because you know the right way to do it because you wrote it.
Yeah. But so I was reading all my reviews right after the festival, and there's one guy, and I realized this guy's giving me the show this year, the show that I just did, I'm really proud of. It was my first really good show, I think. And it was the best reviewed Edinburgh show since they started tracking Edinburgh reviews in 2011 or something like that. It's a really good show. And I'm hoping that I'll be touring it sometime around when this comes out. And I love doing it every day. And this guy gave me 3 stars, and he gave my show before that 3 stars, and he gave my show before that 3 stars. Only ever gave me 3 stars. And that, and I said to Adam, I was bitching about it to Adam, he's like, some people just don't like you. And I was like, okay. He's not wrong. He's like, sometimes you're just like not for everybody. It's just how it works.
You can't please everybody, so you may as well just do it for yourself.
I try to please everyone. Sometimes that's one of my worst habits, is that I try to please everyone. But I do also try to please myself. I try to really impress, or I try to please people that aren't there.
Mm.
I'll try to please an old professor like Zadie Smith. I sometimes think to myself, would Zadie Smith or Darren Strauss or Nathan Englander or any of the professors that I've had at NYU who I admire, those are all great writers if you don't know any of those names, would those people be proud of this joke?
Yeah.
Or would they think it was cheap?
Yeah. It's a good roundup for the end of part one. For the piss break, we'll be right back. I'm not mad at that.
I want some alone time with this burger.
Yeah, that's embarrassing. So usually what happens in the second half, we don't have to do it because you've got a gig. But instead we'll do a sip. We usually do a shot.
I'll do a sip with you.
We'll do a sip. I've got this. I'll just down the rest of this. This is a shot. You do how you feel comfortable. Look, we've got a cheers first, you uncouth man. Cheers.
I'm an American, man. Just down the hunt.
All right. Well, it's tradition, so
it's good.
Oh my god! All right. So here's
shots.
Here's what happens.
Hey, would you mind playing "Shots" by LMFAO?
Only the best song ever written.
Wake up fast. Be the first girl to make me throw that cash.
So the second half is I do the segments. Okay,
let's do segments.
The first segment, it changes every single time. This time it's called A Wistful Ponderance of Irksome Quibbles to Contemplate for Future Generations. So the first one is, it's recurring. If you could eat one creature from a film or TV show, what would it be and how would you cook it?
Eat one creature from a television show.
Yeah, film or TV show. Mine is the long motherfucking dog from Neverending Story.
Mine is the Lorax.
The Lorax.
That shrill motherfucker. You know the Loraxes?
Yeah, yeah,
The Lorax is this environmental advocate.
So you'd be doing it out of spite and anger more than hunger.
Yeah. Okay. No, I'd be doing it out of spite and anger, and I bet that dude tastes great. Because no one who cares that much about the trees is, you know.
Well, he's got to be vegan, so it means.
Oh, he's got to be a vegan.
Super lean, like, yeah, you know.
Well, I would have him with some. I want the cat served in his hat. I want to humiliate these Dr. Seuss characters. I want these characters to feel exactly how I feel.
Yeah, right. And how is that?
When I stumbled through these books as a dyslexic child, Dr. Seuss is not for dyslexic children. It was like, green egg Sam I am is Sam I am. Like, you know, like, it was awful. It was excruciating.
Someone needs to pay, and I think it should be the Lorax.
The Lorax. He speaks for the trees.
Would you beat him up first?
No.
Okay.
No, I'd kill him like Ortolan. You know Ortolan?
No, what's that?
Oh, it's the most forbidden of all of the prepared. And you never heard of Ortolan?
No.
So I found out about this yesterday. No, I've known about this for years.
Is Ortolan on the Backstreet Boys?
I've known about this for years. Ortolan's illegal in France, but it's the most decadent dish in the world. It's this bird that's drowned in cognac, and then you eat it whole,
right,
with bones and all, with your head under a napkin, because it's such an indulgence that apparently it's a crime against God how indulgent it is. It's a tiny bird, so you have to eat it bones and all, and it's like apparently the most delicious fucking thing you've ever had. People absolutely love it. It's like the symbol so I would drown the Lorax in cognac.
Yeah.
And then I would saute him in it for, you know, in just days. And then I would serve the Lorax over a bed of greens prepared from the trees, which he was, you know, spent his life advocating for.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know. Is this the first creature that popped in my mind?
It was great. I love it. That was a great answer.
Yeah. That or any character ever played by Brian Blessed. I'd love to get a bit of Blessed in me.
Yeah. See
that sounded wrong.
See how girthy the lungs are. Gotta get good girth in that lung.
Yes. Blessed.
I just love this Ortolan.
Ortolan.
Ortolan. I can't say
Francois
anything
Mitterrand's
today.
Last meal.
Ortolan. I want to eat this thing. Okay. So this got a couple recurring questions.
Okay, dokie.
But these ones kind of change. Can you truly love someone who chews with their mouth open?
Yes.
Wow.
I hope so. I really hope so. Oh, boy.
I really hope so.
Yes. I love how you assume that. That's not me. Not what we're talking about. No, yeah, you can love anyone as long as they're funny.
True. All right, fair enough. Can you truly love someone whose favorite band of all time is Crazy Town?
What's Crazy Town?
Oh, my God.
Are they like the Vengaboos?
Yeah, I mean, one of the previous ones was Venga Boys as being someone's favorite band.
Really? And what's the worst band that you would put up with someone having your favorite as your favorite band?
It would have to be like Paramore.
What? That's the worst?
Yeah, you know, because actually Paramore have a couple of bangers, so I wouldn't mind.
That's the absolute worst for you.
Yeah. I don't think I could put up with someone who goes... I had an ex who loved Coldplay.
Okay, well, here's the thing.
That's problematic.
Okay, listen.
Because it says a lot about your personality, the band you like. My favorite artist, rapper... I've got two favorite artists of all time, Sinatra and Tupac.
Yeah.
Those are my two.
I mean, those are great. I don't like Sinatra. I can't stand Sinatra because I have trouble with artists who don't sing their own songs.
Right.
No matter what generation, I think it precludes them from... It's like steroids. You don't get to be in the Hall of Fame because, like, Sinatra released these press releases about the Beatles when they first started coming to the States about how they were, you know, no good.
Right.
But Sinatra, like, he didn't write his own music. Like, he's like, I did it my way. And I'm like, you didn't even write this song. But, like, the thing is, I was telling you about that girl that I'm seeing. It's a big problem because she is... Like, compared to her, my taste is really shit.
Right.
Like, not just a little bit shit. Like, she is a hi-fi with a vinyl collection that is, like, robust. Right. And she plays music for me. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, because I have a playlist on Spotify of like all the songs that I like, and like, dude, there's a Coldplay song on there.
Oh no.
Yeah. And not even in, and there's, it's an early Coldplay song, but not that early.
I still love Fix You.
Oh dude, it's Fix You.
Oh, that's, but fine. You get a pass. You get a pass.
Do I get a pass? But like, yeah. Dude, I like, white people deserve music too. Like some anthemic, like I like stuff that's anthemic. Like we had this long conversation.
White about, people
like,
deserve some music.
White too. People deserve music too. White people are almost human beings, man. Like they
so,
deserve
so nearly. So
but
nearly.
This girl, like she's into Brel. She's into like Sarette. Like the, you know Sarette was Sarita. Oh man, I'm mispronouncing her name. Stevie Wonder. She told me this. You're not gonna believe this. Stevie Wonder would call into Motown Records.
Right.
And he liked the receptionist's voice so much that he made an album with her.
Oh my God.
The album's classic. And then get this, he married her.
Oh.
Sarita Ray was married to her from 1970 and 1972. He was married to this woman whose voice he heard on the phone. It's a great.
Wow.
But she's like, she knows all this shit. She knows all of it. It's a nightmare.
Is she older than you? Younger than
you?
No. Oh my God. Then there's no excuse.
She's like 3.5 years younger than me. It is when people talk about like I'm dating this younger woman, I can't keep up. I always thought they were talking like physically, and now I realize that it may be musically because like
shit.
But she knows every movie. She's like, I'm not that well read. I was like, well, how about this book then? She's like, oh no, I've read that one. Like she knows pretty much everything.
Is she from England?
Mm-mm. She's American. She's an American girl.
I feel like Americans read more than English people. I feel like we just get away with our accents.
Let me tell you something.
Good.
You are 100% wrong.
Really?
Yeah. Most Americans don't read anything besides the CVS receipts that they buy.
The huge fucking
The huge Bibles. CVS receipts. Nikki Glaser is a really funny comedian, does a thing where every time they give her a receipt, she puts it around her like a sash and takes a photo and tweets it, Miss CVS. It's very funny. You guys don't even have CVSs here,
do
you?
We do not, but I love CVS. The CVIs.
The CVIs.
CVS in Brookline, nearby where I used to live.
Where I used to live.
And where you used to live. I walked up to once and I walked in, felt something in my shirt, and I was like, oh, what is this? Shook my shirt and an entire cockroach fell out and ran out.
No!
That came
no!
from
me. No! No! Why did you tell me that story?
Sorry. I mean, that was 2005.
I'm so grossed out.
2005.
I'm so grossed out. My favorite color is that. Color I'm about to vomit.
My favorite color is muddy orangey pinky green. So, yeah, sorry. Brookline infested with... No. Okay, fine. What's the biggest small amount of money that someone can borrow that is awkward to ask for back?
What do you mean all good tests, right? You can, if you know me, you can borrow up to, you know, £600 without.
What?
You can borrow £600.
That's so much money.
It's a lot of money, but if I love you and trust you, I'll let
that's
you £600.
Rent.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I had a friend, really good friend, who's so fucked up if I said his name. I had a friend, really good friend, Hal. Hal needed money for rent for a month, so I gave Hal money rent for the month.
That's nice.
And Hal's really talented, and they're a performer, so they opened for me, and I'm like, let's call it even for the rent. And
that's great, though. That's a service provided.
Yeah, yeah, but you
that's
know, like,
fine.
They're like,
but I'm talking. What's the biggest small amount of money?
I think £600. Biggest small amount that you're okay to ask for back.
So if
I hear you 100%.
If I lent you £2.20, and then the next day I was like, hey man, do you have that £2.20? Like where's the cutoff? Where's the cutoff for you that you just I'm just gonna let that slide. I don't need to pay that, you know.
I don't need to 40, get that. 30 quid.
30 quid.
Or no, maybe
you are,
not 30
you are doing well,
not
man.
30 quid. But hey, you know, also like, dude, I've been in a spot where dignity's worth a lot, man. Like people lose dignity pretty cheaply. And so if someone needs, by the way, don't get me wrong, I'll hold it against you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I'll never forget.
But, you know, there's this...
I remember people that voted me a fiver from 10 years ago.
There's this comic named Rick Shapiro. I'm okay saying his name. Probably shouldn't, but I've had a drink.
Give me my money, Rick Shapiro.
Give me my money, Rick. Rick came up to me once, 2011. And he went, "Hey man, can I borrow $50? Remember, I had this moment where I thought, if I give Rick Shapiro $50, I never have to see him again. Ever. Like, I never have to see him again.
Yeah.
So I gave Rick Shapiro $50 and I've never seen him again.
Wow. That's a bargain.
Yeah, for $50, I got rid of Rick Shapiro. But, you know, it's a shame. He was a great comedian once upon a time, I'm sure. But, you know, I was happy to get rid of him.
That is, you know, that's great.
But that's weird because that's, you know, that's the amount of, like the shame is you have to, asking someone for 30 quid is not an insignificant amount of money. But, you know, yesterday I was out to lunch someone and I realized I needed to get to a gig. Mm. And I was like, okay, I actually had to go. I was like, I gotta go. I'll leave you. Yeah. I'll Venmo you or I'll PayPal you. And they're like, no, don't worry about it. Just go. That was, you know, like 20 quid's worth of stuff that I got away with. And I was like, I'm not being cheap. I promise. You know,
I'd feel uncomfortable. I would sit and stew on that for a hot second, unless someone went, you know what? My gift. Then I'd be like, oh, okay.
No, if you were me,
yeah, I would feel.
I was like, I gotta go. They're like, dude, just go. Don't worry about it. But like, we're all pals. They realized, they knew I had to go. Also, they were like, this is running late. You better go.
Yeah, I guess I'm really cheap because I've got a good friend of mine. At one point, she was on her way to DJ, and I was coming with her to one of her gigs. I had a night off. We were in Nando's, and
it's a new dance, no tango. Everywhere I go, I need a Nando's. That's not, I know that's
you're ingratiated in British culture.
That's not how that, no, but that song goes. But every time I like, I see Nando's, I think, skip da.
It's not scary. It's Lethal Bizzle.
Oh, it's Lethal Bizzle?
Yeah.
What does he say? What is he? Oh, Fester Skank. It's Fester Skank. Fester. Sorry, that's right. It is Lethal Bizzle.
Skepta should have done a remix.
Do you know what's so funny? My friend Josh Weller, who's a really funny musician who's just started to do comedy, says, I'm mixed race, which means I'm too white to sing along with any of Skepta's lyrics, but I'm too black to be one of his fans. And that just makes me laugh so hard. Wow. It's such a fucking good joke. But yeah, I'm sorry. I was thinking of Lethal Bizzle, but Lethal. Oh, does he? He does say Nando's, right?
He does.
Two chicken Nando's. Nando's.
So all right. So we were in Nando's.
Sorry.
She got a chicken burger.
Everywhere I go, I need a Nando's. Yes. I can't do it.
This is your remit. Two chicken Nando's. Two, anyway, two
chicken Nando's.
Yeah. She was clearly had a lot on her mind about the radio show or whatever she was about to do.
Yeah, sure.
She didn't finish her burger. Mm-hmm. I went out, took a phone call, whatever. And she come out and joined me. I look through the window, see her and pretty much entire unfinished burger on that plate. This was nearly 8 months ago.
Sure.
I have not let her forget about the fact that she left an unfinished burger at Nando's.
What?
I can't get over it.
Two chicken. Here's what I don't understand. Not taking the Nando's with you. You know what I mean? There, baby. But you know what? Cut her some slack, man. That's hard.
You know what?
Come on, man. Cut her some slack.
I'm never going to forgive her for that. Mm. So this is a new one that I just thought of today. Chicken. I wanted to ask you. Is it, by the way, is it centaurs or centaurs? How do you say it?
You mean the half horse, half man?
Yeah.
Centaurs.
Centaurs?
No, it's centaurs. Centaurs.
Right. So my question is, why do centaurs have arms? Because surely they should just be the head of a man or a woman on a horse body. It doesn't make sense.
They get six. It's part of the deal. When you're a centaur, you get six.
Why do they have six? They should have,
first of all,
they should just be a weird human head stuck on a horse.
No. That's not how it works.
Centaurs. What, the splicing? Like, who fucked who?
Your torso, your waist up, from waist up, you're a dude, and waist down, you're a horse.
But then there's another waist, because as the horse, you've got a second waist.
No, dude, it doesn't work that way.
It does work.
Waist up, horse. Fine. So for your waist is a horse's neck.
Okay, right.
You got to balance it out. Otherwise, you're just going to end up, you're never going to be able to lean your head forward.
Right.
Imagine that. Head on a horse neck. It's ridiculous. You're talking crazy talk, and this is unrealistic. The horse...
It really upsets me. I was looking at them and going, bro, why are you allowed six arms?
You're out of
six
your fucking mind.
You're out of your minge. Okay, and the final one of this segment. Where's the most dangerous place you've ever taken a shit?
This is actually a really easy question for me to answer.
Go on.
Whoa.
And a difficult drink to drink.
Spilled my drink. I took a shit in a port-a-loo. On a Manhattan street corner.
Oh, wow.
In the middle of Hurricane Sandy.
Oh, shit. shit. See, it was already dangerous where I thought you'd gone on maybe to a, I was imagining a building site using, you know, like a Manhattan.
Nope.
This was during a hurricane.
Oh, yeah.
You could have faced toppage.
I had to go.
Hmm.
It was either that or look for an open department store. And there was no open department store. I've told stories on Ricky Gervais's podcast about pooping myself, so I shan't repeat myself.
Fine.
But yeah, it was bad, baby.
Oh my God. Was there loo roll? Toilet roll? Was there toilet paper?
I had a takeaway bag with me. I didn't use the bag. I used a napkin. I used a napkin in the bag.
Okay, fine.
But oh my goodness.
Yeah,
Let me tell you, there was, when I was ready for anything. I just needed a receptacle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But holy shit. It was on 23rd Street. It was in the western part of the city. But
They should put a plaque up.
Yeah, a blue plaque.
A blue plaque. there's a blue plaque down my road for where the first bomb dropped in World War II or whatever.
Really?
On London. Because this was the East End that all got fucked up in the Blitz.
That's right.
Because it was the Jewish area. It was the immigrant area. It was like the... Of course, they didn't fuck with Buckingham Palace.
That would have been nice.
So, second segment, the most famous segment. This is what the one that everyone enjoys. This is called Under the Patio. This is where the people... Oh, man, the people that have pissed me off this week. You're going to enjoy this one. I suggest the scenarios that these people have pissed me off in, and I tell you what they do, and you tell me the type of capital punishment that they deserve for their crimes, okay? Some people are really lenient. Some people...
I'm pretty lenient. I'm anti-death penalty, except for the fucking Lorax, but, you know, I'm down to here. Yeah, let's do it.
It's entirely fictional. People that say frye...
What's a frye?
Frye, with reference to, of course, Friday. We're really happy it's the weekend.
Oh, man. I don't know. Those people should be taken for a long helicopter ride.
Sounds really pleasant so far.
No, no. And then you toss them out, and as they're falling, you take aim.
Great.
There you go.
So it's also a good game for you.
Oh, it is. You just yell pull when you push them out of the helicopter.
Perfect.
Yeah.
People that don't put away the trays at the airport when you're going through security.
Oh, man. You know what they should do is they should seat those people on the wing.
Seat them on the wing. I'm forever troubled by that episode of The Simpsons where there's the clown on the wing. Did you ever see that
one?
Yeah. For every flight I take, I'm like, don't look at the wing.
Yeah.
I'm perpetually...
You seat them on the wing and you take off and you just let nature run its course.
These are all aeroplane or flight.
Yeah, I guess. Well, you said one that was airline themed after it had already given an airline death penalty. Go ahead.
People that reply to a group WhatsApp or an un-BCC'd email.
Boy, you think you're really funny today, huh?
I think I'm really funny every day. But this just pisses me off, man, because what type of person would you see all of the email addresses? You're not a grandma. You understand how emails work.
First of all, what you do is you bury them up to their necks.
You're right.
Next, at the base of a dam. Mm,
okay.
And then you wait for the first rainfall.
Yeah.
And that's how you get them.
Okay, good. I like speeding through these because your answers are going to get increasingly more
complicated,
and I'm really into that. I'm picking the right one. This is people who say, I don't know how relevant this is to your American experience, but people who say, well, it's using taxpayers' money to literally argue against anything.
You make them part of a road work.
All right, yeah, no, I agree with that, man.
Yeah, there you go. Is that squeak?
I got a couple regular listeners messaged in some.
Oh, sweet.
You know. This is from James Drinkle. People that sit next to you when the rest of the bus or train is completely empty.
Firing squad.
you know, Alex is going through them.
Everyone is really
today.
Everyone is really bunched. Everyone in the firing squad is really bunched closely together. Mm. And you tell the person that if the firing squad misses, that they get to walk away. But then you bunch everybody up and you put them like a foot away, and you, yeah, and like the guy gets to be like, "But you're allowed to stand over there." And they're like, "Well, we want to stand over here. We have a right to do so." So that's how
you know what I mean. I like the answers when people really teach them a lesson before. You know what I mean?
There's something really, a little bit of dramatic, a little bit of terminal dramatic irony, you know?
Yeah, it's like Saw. You got to learn your lesson.
Yeah, it's like Saw.
It's just like Saw. All right, we're gonna do one more. Unless there's people that have pissed you off recently, you know, you can add your own to the Under the Patio.
You know, people who tell you they have a passion for fresh ingredients.
Right.
Yeah, I like them to be slowly fed into a wood chipper.
But
feet
who's
first.
Saying this?
You've never heard that?
No, because what they don't.
People
like...
cooking on cooking shows go, I have a real passion for fresh ingredients. And me alone at home on my couch eating a takeaway, I just go, ugh.
I hate most people on cooking shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're really bad people. I have a passion for them being dead. It really they
with a full disclaimer, we're not actually
this is all fictional,
because I'm always like whenever anyone's like these people should die, I'm always like
no one should die except for the people we've mentioned.
Okay, what's the last one
okay. People that call you a nickname when they don't know you well, aka people that invent a new unsanctioned nickname.
I didn't know this. So there's in the Torah, there's the 70 letter name of God that human beings can't hear. And okay, if they do, they die. Someone needs to find out those words and whisper them softly using a megaphone into the ear of these people. And they'll immediately have their chest ripped open because their heart can't handle the true nature of God. So that's how that.
Wow.
Is. Yeah.
That's. Can we just. Have you had an experience of an unsanctioned nickname?
Oh, totally. Ali, Lexi, A.E., Eddie, Edelberger, even people that call me Edelman, like I'm like there's some fucking football coach. My name is Alex. You call me Alex, and if you know me really well, maybe we come. People who call me Al, I don't like it. Some people call me Edelweiss. My friend Alfie calls me Edelweiss. It's fine if Alfie does it, but you know, like.
But that's, you know, that's over time. He's nurtured that name.
Totally. I don't like an unsanctioned nickname. Especially don't like just. My last name said to me, like, I'm a conscript in an army I don't want to be in.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, thank you.
All right. Well, listen, before we wrap this up, there's a third super secret segment that if it doesn't work, I'm just going to edit the whole thing out.
Yes.
And I'm not going to do the segment again. But sent in by Eric Pearson, the writer of Thor Ragnarok. He's got a new segment that he's given me.
No, I don't believe that.
True story called Hard Decisions, which is essentially, I'm not going to lie, it's pretty much Would You Rather.
Okay.
So I'm going to pick one. He's given me a list. All right. Eric Pearson. Big shout out to Eric Pearson.
Eric, I love you.
Have your burps smell like farts, or have your orgasms give you sudden diarrhea? That's a good one to end the show on. Really nice family one.
Mate, have your burps smell like farts?
Yeah. Or have your orgasms give you sudden diarrhea?
Okay.
It's a really important question, man. Eric Pearson with the hard decisions.
Well, here's the thing. I burp a few times a day. I orgasm a few times a year.
Standard.
I think
stuff,
the burps smelling like... Well, what kind of farts are we talking? Is it farts where like a little bit of stuff could come out? Because part of the fart is the danger of walking that... That tightrope.
And it all depends on what you eat as well. So if you're having a clean diet, if you're you know,
I don't know. I mean, what would you pick for this? I think the burps that smell like farts.
I would rather my burps smell like farts because I could always proactively have. I could do a chewing gum all the time. I could try and I could get drops maybe to scent my stomach, like the poo drops.
Yeah, no, that's how I feel too. I
could not risk.
It would smell like a taxi cab though, right? Like shit covered up by an air freshener.
Yeah, I can't risk diarrheaing diarrhea-ing on another woman, you know?
On another woman?
Yeah, I can't risk that, you know?
I don't know, man. I think
it's ruined so many relationships.
I'd rather. Is there an option C? But if not, I think that I gotta go.
What is the option C? Just to have none of the problems.
Yeah, I'd rather have C. No, none of the problems, please.
Everything's great. Sure.
No, I think definitely. I think it's a no-brainer. I think I can't love anyone who goes orgasm diarrhea. Although if a woman said that, that would be quite a savage burn. I mean, like, well, I never have one, so I'd be happy to.
This
but also,
women have orgasms?
Oh my God, buddy, we should have this conversation away from the air.
Yeah, not on mic.
All right, anything else?
No, this is...
That's it? Can I plug some stuff?
You can plug whatever you want.
My name's Alex Edelman. I like to plug the podcast. Thanks for trying. The Last Skeptic.
You know, it's a great podcast.
Also, I have a DVD for sale.
What?
Yeah, it's the complete series of Breaking Bad, but I have it for sale.
Oh my God, yeah.
It's a box set. No, my name is Alex Edelman, and please follow me on social media because I should have an album out by the time this comes out, or about to be out. And
an album? A musical album?
An album of comedy.
I was going to say.
No. But, you know, also be writing on a Netflix show that I can't say the name of yet, but it's going to be exciting. Yeah, please follow
me. You've got your own Netflix fucking special.
Yeah, I've got an hour on Netflix UK called Live from the BBC. So if you just search my name, Alex Edelman, that's easy enough to check out. But they're probably sick of me though after hearing me for 2 straight hours on this.
But big thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
All right, cheers. Bye.
So as you can hear, that was recorded in February 2019. With the incredible Alex Edelman, amazing comedian. I was definitely not my usual self, and as you can tell, it was because I was in the beginning stages of writing a very sad breakup album, so I'm sorry if it's not as lols filled as usual, even though it's still quite a high percentage of lols in there. And if you're still listening to the end and you haven't skipped past this bit and gone straight to the next episode, then you know what to do. Go onto iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Go fucking hit a 5-star. Go fuck up that motherfucker that gave me a little 2-star review. I hate that guy or girl or whoever, however they identify. I hate them. And I just want to know what I did wrong. If you're listening now and you voted whatever, you rated it 2 stars, what did I do wrong? Come and see me, buy a cup of coffee. Let's talk about this. Let's work it out. And maybe we'll hug it out. You know, who knows? Whatever happens, I'm sorry. So, but anyway, to you, have a great night. And to everyone else listening, you also have a great night or day. Love you all.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.